The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John.
Glory be to you, Lord.
The sisters of Lazarus sent word to Jesus saying, "Master, the one you love is ill." When Jesus heard this, he said, "This illness is not going to end in death, but is for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard he was ill, he remained for 2 days in the place he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." When Jesus arrived, he found Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him. But Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, Your brother will rise." Martha said, "I know he will rise in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I have come to believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world." He became perturbed and deeply troubled and said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Sir, come and see." And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not the one who opened the eyes of the blind man have done something for this man so he would not have died?" So Jesus, perturbed again, came to the tomb. It was a cave. A stone lay across it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the dead man's sister, said to him, "Lord, by now there will be a stench. He has been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you for hearing me. I know you always hear me. But because of the crowd, I have said this, that they may believe you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, tied hand and foot with burial bands, and his face was wrapped in a cloth. So Jesus said to them, "Untie him and let him go." Now many of the Jews who had come to see Mary and seen what had been done began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
In the past, I have been cautioned not to begin a homily by saying, "I'll try to be brief." Then people say, "That's where you are not brief." But I'm going to try to be somewhat restricted today because we have a very important ceremony with our RCA community as part of this liturgy. The text of today's gospel comes from chapter 11 in the book of John. It's the last and the greatest of the seven signs mentioned in the Gospel of John. John does not mention miracles. He mentions signs, all miraculous events in the Gospel of John, unique to John. He speaks of as signs. So they're meant to point us to something deeper and something beyond the immediate event of the miraculous sign. The seventh, the last, and the greatest of signs is the raising of Lazarus. Now, in chapter 7 in the Gospel of Luke, there is an event where Jesus raises from the dead the son of the widow at Nain, a small village near Nazareth. But that young man had just died. Lazarus, 4 days in the tomb, he wasn't dead. He was very dead. I mean, he was gone. The Jews had a belief that the spirit would hover over the tomb for 3 days. And after 3 days, the body would be disfigured by putrefaction, and therefore the spirit, not recognizing it, would leave. And therefore, 4 days in the Jewish consciousness, in an extended period of time where he is beyond life, the spirit is gone. And Jesus calls him forth and gives him new life. Therefore, it's considered the seventh and the greatest of all the signs which appear in the Gospel of John. Clearly, Jesus had a very close relationship with Martha and Mary and Lazarus. It was his home away from home. He lived most of his life up north, about 65 miles north in Galilee, Nazareth, Cana, Sea of Galilee, Bethsaida, Mount of Beatitudes, all up north. But in John's Gospel, he appears to come back and forth quite a few times. That's a 65-mile walk. So you can tell, looking at the life of Jesus, that there were great walkers in those days. Not like us. We park at the parking lot. When we go to Safeway, you park up close to the building. Those people then were great, great walkers. So let me look at this sign, the powerful sign of Jesus appearing here in John's Gospel. Very interesting is it's not mentioned in the other three Gospels. Now, that's extraordinary in itself. Since this was such an extraordinary sign and miracle, how is it that the other three Gospels didn't record this great miracle of Jesus? So let me look at the signs. I mean, I've looked at these signs before in homily, but I want to just examine each sign very briefly to get a feel for what these signs truly mean to us. The first sign is in chapter 2 in the Gospel of John, the wedding feast at Cana. Remember that? And Jesus turned water into wine, 120 gallons. John does not mean to take that literally. He means when Jesus performs a miracle, a sign, a gift, it's superabundant, it's extravagant. That's the meaning of the 120 gallons. Second sign, also at Cana, a royal official, non-Jewish person, comes to him to heal his son who is dying. And Jesus goes beyond the Jewish culture, and his sign, his miracle, reaches a non-believer. Keep that in mind. His sign, his miracle, his love, his redemption touches those who are non-believers. That's the royal official. Third sign is a man who is sick for 38 years by the pool of Bethesda. Many of the pilgrims who are here have been to the pool of Bethesda near the Sheep's Gate in Jerusalem. Sick for 38 years. The teaching? Wait. If you wait patiently, the Lord will come. Not 20, 38 years, but it meant to tell us that waiting is important. You wait for the Lord. You don't demand. You don't coerce the presence. You wait for the Lord to come. And sometimes you have to go through a period of suffering and struggling before the touch of God's healing comes to you. The next two signs are back up north in Galilee again. The feeding of the multitude. Jesus feeds 5,000. The sign? the Eucharist. Who is fed in the 5,000? Whoever is hungry. Not worthy, hungry. The sign of the Eucharist. And by the way, in the Gospel of John, Jesus gives a long talk in chapter 6 about the Eucharist after he has fed the multitude. The next sign is Jesus calms the waters, the storm on the Sea of Galilee. Reassures them, gives them life, calms those who are anxious. Will the storm come back? Yes, the storms will come back. Will you have this experience again? Yes, you will. But now you will know that even in the time of storm, anxiety, and disturbance, Jesus is with you. The next sign is back down in Jerusalem. A man born blind. He's born blind. A long story about the man born blind. And he's born blind, but now Jesus allows him to see things he has never seen in his life. Now he can see. Many of us are born blind. We probably live blindly. And then the touch of Jesus allows us to see things we did not see before. That's the man born blind. And then we have chapter 11, which is the Lazarus, the seventh sign. What's interesting about these signs is their diversity and the fact that in all the stories of the signs, there is never any indication that anybody ever earned the gift given to them in Jesus Christ. It's love. It's a sign of God's love for you. You didn't earn it. You didn't purchase it. If you have somebody in your life that loves you, you won't know that until you fail and you can't purchase this. You can't return it. And then you receive love. Then you know that's truly love. These are the signs. The signs of Jesus Christ are free, unmerited gifts of God's presence for us. And they are diverse. Reflect on the diversity of these signs. The celebration of a wedding, the gift of wine, the man who is blind, the man who is sick, the calming of the waters, the feeding of the multitude freely, total gift, especially to those who will not remember it and will not thank Jesus. So when Jesus hits his crisis, which we will observe in our liturgy in the next couple of weeks, where were all these people that he blessed? Sometimes we bless people, they're ungrateful, and we become disturbed because it wasn't a gift. It was a purchase. I'll do this for you, and you must do something for me. If you don't return it, I'm disturbed because it wasn't a gift. If it's a gift, it's free. God blesses us freely, generously, and in great abundance. So watch the diversity of God's great love for people. Many of you have traveled and seen the cathedrals of Europe. For those of you who have closely looked at the cathedrals of Europe, you'll find very commonly what's called the Rota Fortuna. It's a circular window. It's at Notre Dame in Paris. It's at Notre Dame in Chartres. And I've seen it at St. Stephen's Cathedral in Vienna. But you'll find it in many cathedrals. The Rota Fortuna is an understanding of life that is pre-Christian. Actually, Cicero, 100 years before Christ, mentions it, and it's called Fortuna after a Roman goddess said to be the one who oversees the economy and the unfolding of life. But in the early Middle Ages, it became Christianized so that we would get a teaching from it. And in the Rota Fortuna windows that you'll see in the cathedrals in Europe, it's a circular window. And at the top, there's a man sitting there with a crown. And underneath is written, "Regno, I have power." And then moving toward 3 o'clock, the man is falling and the crown is falling from his head. And the written in Latin, "Regnavi, I used to have power." Down at the bottom, 6 o'clock down here, there's a man downcast and despondent. Underneath, "Sum sine regno, I used to have power." And then up here at 9 o'clock, coming back, is a man rising, and it says, "Regnabo, I will have power." That's the circle of life. What's fascinating about it, in the Christian understanding, is all the spokes go to the center, and Christ is in the center. So Christ is there when you have power. Christ is there when you're falling. Christ is there when you have nothing and you're despondent and you're at the bottom of the pit. Christ is there. And when you're coming back into redemption and calling from darkness into light, Christ is there. Christ is present in all experiences of life. We just have to see. You just have to feel and sense the presence of a redeeming Christ. Wherever you are in your life, you think you're shut out of the church, you think you don't qualify, Christ is with you. You're full of grace, your life is blessed. You didn't earn it. It's all gift. Sometimes, I've said this before, you know, I'm playing golf, and I notice I'm on the cart and there's another guy cutting the lawn, cutting the grass. How come I'm not cutting the grass? Did I earn this? I could have been born in the Ukraine. You could have been born in the Ukraine. How did you become so blessed? Did you earn it? No, you didn't earn it. The intelligence you have, the things that were opened up for you in life, the opportunities, all gifts. See how God has touched you. So here's the teaching. Walk through life in the presence of God, sensing Jesus Christ in your life. This awareness of Christ, everything that happens to you. Call on Jesus Christ in your life. Feel the presence, the touch of God's love for you, wherever you are in your life. You're full of life. Life is full of promise. Christ is there. You're in darkness. You're lonely. Your life is empty. You're abandoned. You're betrayed. You're in darkness. Christ is with you. This is the teaching of the seven signs in the Gospel of John, reaching their culmination in Jesus calling forth out of a place of death, darkness, hopelessness, emptiness. "Come forth," he says. "I call you into new life." And then, in another homily, at another time, we'll discuss what it means, untie him and let him go free. Draw him into your community. Allow him to belong to you. See the gift that God is giving to you in somebody who is called to new life. So I want to get this sense, as we approach the Easter celebration, that I have this sense of God is in my life. How do I make the Lord's Day holy? I walk in the presence of God. Count my blessings. Lift up my spirit. Get the sense that Jesus Christ is in your life. when you walk this way in the presence of the living God, life unfolds before you, and life will have a deep, profound, and enduring meaning. Amen.